Hey everybody, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, where I have people rewrite famous movies and television shows they've never seen. We have a very special episode coming up. Lawrence of Arabia was rewritten by Dan Harmon.
Yeah, that's a real burn burner.
So please check it out wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, I'm Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley.
And I'm Chemda.
Welcome to My Opening Line. Be sure that you're... Fuck off. I can't do this. Goodbye, Ted. All right, here we go. Hi, I'm Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley.
And I'm Chemda. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to My Opening Line. Be subscribed. MyOpeningLine.com. Whenever new shows come out every week, they pop in automatically. You know how it works. Automatically into your feed. In fact, look at the app Laughable. You can subscribe to My Opening Line, but you can also subscribe to the person.
So you can subscribe to us as hosts, or you can subscribe to our guest today or any past guest. We've had some amazing people on: Gilbert Gottfried, Matteo Lane, Emma Willman.
So you would type in, for example, I want to subscribe to Gilbert, and any show of any kind that Gilbert is on, boom, right into your feed. All right, laughable.com. Today's guest has performed at Carnegie Hall, Madison Square Garden. You've seen him on David Letterman, Conan O'Brien, Jimmy Kimmel, Craig Ferguson. He's been in Egypt, Jordan, Kuwait, Hong Kong, South Africa, Israel. He's been blocking your traffic with Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, the climate march. Ladies and gentlemen, savior, superhero, and comedian of over 25 years, Ted Alexander.
That is quite an intro.
Right? You did all that.
Well, not the savior part.
Well, you're trying.
I'm working on it.
Obviously, you look around, nothing gets solved, does it? Kind of a waste of time. But you know what? The air is good for you. It's healthy. You're looking great.
Thank you.
Marching never hurt anybody physically.
That's right. It's part of my overall fitness regimen.
And by the way, I take that back. It probably has, but you see the point I'm trying to make.
Right. I'm so glad you said it. I was like, do I let that pass?
Before the show, we were talking about introductions that people give comedians on stage. And Chemda was saying how when she would host an event, she wonders if she's being too lame about it because she pays so much attention.
I am, though. I am. Because I got made fun of by Robert Kelly the last time I hosted. So hosting, you know, you go up in the beginning and then you introduce people the whole night. And to me, that's a very important job because they're constantly seeing you. So if they don't like you, it's over. And then you're making it harder for other people because you're in between all their sets.
Right.
So I print out, you know, everyone's credits and I write their names and I make sure that if there's a name that I'm not familiar with, I practice it and all that.
Right.
And so then I pay attention to the entire show. So if I can riff on a joke that they said. And so I come up with like a bunch of sheets of paper on stage after I introduced Robert Kelly. He comes up and he looks at the notes, looks at me. There's no time. There's only the time of shaking hands in between people. Right. He's on stage, he shakes hand. As he's shaking my hand, he looks down at my notes and goes, are those all your notes? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes,
right.
Then he rips on me. He completely insults me. Luckily, there was a second mic, so I just, you know, back and forth with him, right, which was fun. But
I've seen these comedians, though, that do host, saying people's names wrong. Now, we know that apparently you can just make up credits.
Oh, yeah. One of the first times that I've ever seen comedy was at Boston Comedy Club in New York City. And I didn't understand comedy. I didn't know you guys were riffing off the top. I thought you guys were riffing off the top of your head. Right. Like, because you would say things like, hey, on my way over here, my girlfriend dumped me. I'm like, what a day this guy's having.
Take off work today.
Yeah. He got into a car accident. It's just, you know, and one of the things that they did was this night, they interspersed professional comics with newbies that are open micers. And I didn't know that. So they would introduce everybody like, here, this guy was on whatever version of Conan was on at the time and things like that. And one of the comedians revealed, because they can't help themselves, they're like, I was never on any of those shows. But anyway, I'll still tell you jokes. Right. And my head exploded. Because what I said was, oh, they can tell me anything. And I did perk up like, oh, this guy was on TV. Let me pay attention. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what I learned was, stop doing that, because it doesn't matter what credits they had. You thought whatever joke was funny. So I started perking up whether they had good credits or not because I'm there to laugh.
But it makes sense. It is funny, though. You know, I will pay attention if you promise me that this person said thoughts before on stage confidently.
Yes.
He will be telling you new thoughts, but with the same confidence as if they were old thoughts. Here we go. But Ted brought up the point. A ballet person comes out, you're going to know right away if if they've done that before.
Yeah, there's certain careers that you can't fake.
Right.
Yeah, stand-up is so peculiar in that, like, you can decide in the afternoon, I'm going to go sign up for an open mic.
Right.
Yeah, because you're like, someone broke up with me a while ago. I can talk.
Right. Right. I've had quite a day.
Yeah. Quick, put me on before the feelings register.
Yeah. So you're immediately thrust in with, like you said, professionals who have been doing it for years and are on television. Like, no other career. Like, you're not going to be doing surgery the night decide I want to be a doctor or you know what I mean? It's
maybe we should do it like surgery. Like, just there should be like a different pool.
That's what I like about stand up weirdly, is that in a sense I feel as though it prevents you from getting too much of an ego, because it's like,
have you met some of these comics?
Well, yeah, depending on how reflective you are. Because you are sharing the stage with, you know, constantly with people who are just starting or whatever. And I think it's a good thing. You know, it's a good thing to be reminded of, like, when you started and all that.
Yeah,
like,
for the audience, of course. Yeah, it's a great thing to be reminded of all those things. Yeah.
For them, not as much.
And $30 for an entire night out, that keeps you humble.
Absolutely. Yes.
Ted went out and fought for that. We're all the way up to $30 for an A-list celebrity.
Drinks are on me, guys. You may have seen me on.
But 25 years and you still love it.
I do.
And by the way, the only other job I can even think of where you're a comedian as soon as you do it, porn star.
Oh, wow.
Right?
And yeah. In fact, you don't have to be at a venue for that second one.
That's right.
You just videotape yourself and post it, and you're like, guess what? I'm a star today.
That's true.
Quite the day.
When you get into stand-up, is it because you saw people you admired, or you saw the opposite? Like, obviously, I can do this.
Oh, both.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think initially you see people who inspire you and you just love comedy, you know, grew up listening to, you know, Carlin and Cosby, and, you know, my parents had albums around the house. So,
you're so confident saying that name.
Cosby?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he was a great comic at one point. Now he's a rapist.
I'm a little too proud of myself to say that I always found Cosby a bore. And?
B-O-O-R or B-O-R-E?
All of them.
Both, yeah. No, you could be right, yeah.
And I never got into the Breakfast Club either. So I just want to say I was always ahead of the curve when it comes to
Did the cast of the Breakfast Club rape people?
It's a little anti-Me Too, that movie. And yeah. I think maybe I realized all this stuff ahead of time.
Well, everything is that. Oh, that's the reason you didn't care for it?
It's
you
felt it was maybe subconsciously. I was like, maybe it's not cute that he's going between her legs under the desk during detention.
Look how much credit Keith wants for this.
I'm just saying.
I'll give it to him. I'll grant you that.
You know, people need to listen. I think they don't understand a genius could be alive in their lifetime. And that's why it doesn't register. But whatever, it's about you. So you go on stage.
Well, just to answer the question, the people who I enjoyed kind of, I guess, you know, planted a seed. Well, not even planted a seed to do it, but just that I really loved comedy. But then as I got older and then seeing shows and seeing people who weren't good gave me the spark of like, oh, you know, I guess I could be at least that good.
Right. It's not magic necessarily.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. I can learn. When you see Cosby, do you think, will I stand up doing comedy where I lay down? Like, there's so many ways to do it. Yeah.
It's funny you mention that, because I went to see him. I think I took my mom, like, one year. We went to Carnegie Hall, and we saw him. And this was, like, you know, not that long ago, maybe, you know, relatively speaking, like maybe 15 years ago. So he was already old. The Cosby Show was over, all that. But to your point, like, he was sitting the whole show.
And he doesn't even, like, sit on a stool.
No.
he sits on a Lazy Boy recliner. Guy has
it's tea, a chair.
He has
it's
tea next to him.
It's a chair. Yeah, he's got. He had a table with all sort. It wasn't just like a glass of water. Right. It was like there was a few things, like some tea bags and maybe cheese. I don't know. There was more
That's
than
funny. When I was dating, I was scared to drink tea like with a wide mouth thing because it would fall down the side of my face. But no, right. Do it on TV. Oh no, and on stage.
Right, right.
He has sugar cubes. The whole ritual.
Yes, yes.
He's making Turkish coffee over a flame.
And the saddest part is you're not allowed to bring drinks into his show.
That's right. Right. That's right.
Well, he has his own.
Yeah. Yeah, special. Yeah. It was fascinating, though, because, you know, I was doing comedy at the point that I saw him. And, you know, it was post, if you remember the documentary Seinfeld. Did you guys see that? Mm-hmm. The Comedian, is that what it's called?
Yes.
There's a part in that where Chris Rock is telling Jerry that he went to see Seinfeld and it just blew his mind. He did 2 hours, none of which he had seen before and all this stuff. So that was part of like what planted the seed of like, oh yeah, this guy is still out there. He's still great. Let me go see him. Right. And he was great. But yeah, it was also like fascinating that it made an impact to me of like, yeah, this guy is just sitting in a chair and really commanding a room for 2 hours,
right.
You know, and, you know, he works at a very deliberate pace and it's a very different thing.
And you're thinking, what if by the time I do it, I can literally phone it in over Skype to a giant speaker in the theater.
Right. Yeah, that did cross my mind.
How about you videotape my therapy sessions and just play it for people? So it is something, though, when you want to thank your, who got you to do that. You know what? I saw the great Jerry Seinfeld. I saw Bill Cosby. Other people I'd like to thank? The people that blew it. John the Magician. That really taught me if I just dedicate some time. The first time you performed, this was in your local community, like a talent show, right?
Yeah, yeah. The very first time, I was probably about 20 or so. And
now that's late for a veteran, it seems. You know, everybody seems like they were 8. It was their local salad bar.
I don't know. Is that true? I feel as though like the teenager ones are more the exception.
Yeah, I just feel like I'm hearing 13 and 14 a lot.
Really?
I'm making Ted think he wasted his time. You know, I didn't even know when I talk to people like that, I didn't know you can do things before 18.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Do you know what Elon Musk was doing shit at 16? I'm like, right. Other than wash dishes?
I'll go a step further. I don't think you should do anything before 18. So don't feel bad. Don't put pressure on yourself.
Yeah, I didn't ask Gilbert Gottfried for the lost tapes. You're right.
Well, did Gilbert start as a teenager?
He started at 13 or 14. And then we had Ruby Karp on, who was interviewed about feminism when she was 3 by Amy Poehler.
When she was 3?
3.
She was with her mother or something?
Not in the interview, but yeah, her mother got her the interview, but she still got interviewed and wrote a song about feminism.
Wow.
And then at 12, she had her first TED Talk. So, Ted, speed it up. Get your shit together.
I've been having TED Talks my whole life.
In all fairness, the song didn't even make the charts. Okay, so don't feel too bad.
Right, right.
It's a kid song.
Yeah, so I did it kind of on a whim. Like there was a community. We had this really cool guy who was like the youth community group guy at the not even my church. A local church that was the next neighborhood over.
Is Ted like the sweetest guy you ever met? It's like, anyway, community theater. We went to church. I went with my mom to Cosby show.
Well, it's you might be picturing something that wasn't really the case. This guy like brought the Ramones to play at the church. Like this guy was like, he was just an artist, kind of a really out there eccentric guy who was pretty dynamic.
He's so, like, you might be getting the wrong impression. Have you heard of the altar boy scandal? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. He was behind that. Yeah. So this guy was like, he was doing like a lot of cool things, which is why I went there instead of like, you know, my own church thing. Mm-hmm. This guy was doing like really interesting thing. So I was like, all right, he's putting together a show. There's going to be like bands and whatever. So I signed up to do stand up. And I had like told my friends that I was working on like 5 minutes or whatever. And, you know, I didn't really think that I would have a place to do it. But then when I heard about this show, I went and did it. And it was kind of like what you're talking about in that, like, they were also kids on the show. So there was this girl who played piano and sang Wind Beneath My Wings. And then I had to follow her right. with my stand-up.
Which isn't fair because stand-up, that's stressful. Singing, if you could sing, you could sing.
You can sing.
Right.
And if you're a cute kid playing the piano.
Yeah. yeah. Get out of town.
Right.
Then you don't have to know how to sing.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So, yeah. So actually, you know, it was funny because I posted it on Facebook years ago. And like, I'm horrified looking at it because, you know, I was 20, first time on stage. Right. I sounded like I was straight out of Central Casting for like a Queens guy.
Right.
Oh my God. What does that sound like? Can you bring it up again?
You know, it's funny because my wife, Madeline, makes fun of me that I can't even do a Queens accent now. Like, that's I funny. Can't. She's like, I like the way you used to sound. She's like, you should do a character now on stage of like what you used to be. I was like, I can't even speak like that anymore. It just happened over time. I think because I hadn't traveled much up until I started doing stand-up that I progressively just kind of lost the New York Queens accent.
I don't think I sound... I grew up in Queens also. I don't think I sound like Queens, but when our voice started going over podcasting, and I think this was years ago, people heard of me as New York, as Queens. Mm. And when I got married, my husband sometimes like, I'll get into it by accident and I don't even hear it. And he'll just go, wish I put it in the drawer. Did you just say drawer?
Right.
And I'm like, no, right. I couldn't have said drawer.
Yes.
Who talks like that?
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. It pops up from time to time.
What would be funny if this church was very unforgiving? No pun. And they're like, What? Is he picking on our fair, on our bake sale? What did you talk about?
Oh God, I did a thing about talk about me too. I did a thing about.
So you're telling me Jesus is dead, right? 3 days, okay. Only one person finds him, his mother. No one's interested. That's what you're telling me. Where are you taking me? Where am I going? Hello? Okay.
Yeah, very hard-hitting conspiracy theory stuff. I did a joke about gymnasts having small chests, and when they bow, why are they... Why are they sticking out their chests?
Okay.
I like that you're embarrassed by this.
It was, mortifying.
So you put this video up. This is for Throw Up Thursday.
Yeah.
Throwback.
Yeah. For Please Don't Watch Thursday. Yeah. My then roommate taped it and he had the tape. So he sent it to me and I was like, oh, I gotta put this up just because it's embarrassing and, you know, whatever.
How did the church love it?
Well, you know, it was funny because like people were not there to see stand up. You know, like, do you ever see a talent show where someone does stand up? Like, talent shows are usually music or whatever, some kind of skill, juggling or whatever the hell.
When you signed up, did somebody say something to you? Like the father go, huh?
No, because again, it was that community guy who like was, you know, he had booked the Ramones to play, you know? So, he was like, oh, great, you're going to do stand up? Yeah. So, yeah, but I was not good. But what was funny to me is like when people commented on.
But why do they? Sorry, why do they have chests? These ballet people.
You're talking about the gymnasts.
Gymnasts.
Yeah. No, it's
it makes you wonder.
To this point, I still wonder. No, it was awful. It was like when you're starting stand up, it's really just about speaking words into a microphone.
Right.
You know, like But the comments that people put were like, oh, that's like totally you. You were fully formed from the first time. And I'm not being humble. I didn't feel that way at all. I felt it was embarrassing and the material was bad. I was bad. I was nervous. I was kind of like just pacing. I was like playing with the microphone cord. Like,
you should do that material now, 25 years later. And then, assuming it gets low reviews, say to these people, go, what the fuck?
You guys misled me.
There's not one 5-star review. You guys said this was great. I'm looking like an idiot.
Did you kind of lose confidence at any point, or did you drive it all when you didn't hear a response when you assumed there would be, right?
Well, the thing was, like, I didn't bomb that first time. It was just like fine. It was like, you know, not like I went down in flames. It wasn't like I killed. It was just like, oh, I did that, you know? And it wasn't like I was doing that with the mindset of this is the first of like, I'm starting a career in comedy. That was just a whim.
Did you feel anything afterwards? Like, I should do this again, or that was fun, whatever.
I think like I felt like, yeah, like kind of energized, like all the feelings that you feel when you do stand up. Like I was terrified. I was kind of thrilled by it. Some things worked. Some things like were awful. But yeah, just I think it was enough that I was like, I think I can do this. You know, I can do it again.
How long did it take you before you got on stage again?
Oh, gosh, probably.
When were the Ramones in town again?
Well, the Ramones weren't on that show. That was a separate event. I wasn't opening for the Ramones. Yeah, they weren't on the talent show. It probably was another couple of years before I went up and did it. Because, you know, I did it as part of a duo also with Hollis, my buddy. We did it as a duo, like when we graduated college, Hollis James and I did it as a duo. So it was probably like 2 years before I did it with Hollis, and then like another year or two after that that I made the decision to do it solo, and that was like the beginning of like a career.
How do you go solo? Do you have to tell them? I love what we have, but if we separate, we can cover more ground.
Yeah, no, it was a little awkward just because...
This is your BFF to the day, right? Even now.
Yeah. He's still one of my... best friends for sure, but he lives out in LA now, you know, so we
fuck him.
Yeah, we don't see each other.
You're like, decades later you're gonna want to move to LA, so why don't we just break it off now?
I'm thinking of you. The thing was that we weren't doing it as often as we had to as a duo. We were doing it once every 3 weeks, every month, you know,
scheduling permits.
Yeah, and then the writing too. Like you have to do everything together, you know. So I was just more and more feeling like, and I guess more and more writing stuff that was for me, you know. So yeah, so I kind of told him like I'm going to do this, and it wasn't like we're stopping. I was still doing stuff with him, but then yeah, it just as I remember it, you know, this is 25 years ago. It just kind of naturally went more in the direction of like I'm doing this solo.
When do you feel like you have a stride on stand-up? Like, hey, this is what I do.
You know, I felt pretty good early on. Like from the first, I did a show, the first time I did it solo with the intention of kind of pursuing it. I did a show, they had like this Stars of Tomorrow thing at the Duplex down on Christopher Street. And
that always feels so good. Stars of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something about it. Like, I could just see them getting it together, go, and we'll call it Stars of Tomorrow, and everyone will feel special because we know.
Yeah,
it's such an 80s thing to...
Oh, man.
To pretend and to manipulate with weird words.
Yes.
But anyway, yes.
Yeah. No, it definitely felt that way.
They were right for you.
Well, yeah, tomorrow. It was a lot of tomorrows before.
Right. The sun will come out. It's that kind of tomorrow. Yeah. I'll be out of this orphanage tomorrow.
Yeah. So on the one hand, yeah, I felt pretty good early on. Like after I did that set at the Duplex, I felt like, you know, I've got a hand. And now, mind you, I had done a lot of acting in high school and college. I had done the thing with Hollis as a two-man. So I had performance chops to like be in front of people. But yeah, as far as like making it a career, like when I did Conan for the first time, that was kind of a stamp of approval of like, wow, now I'm like, you know, like you get a TV credit. You're not just in the clubs. It kind of signals...
How many years doing stand up when you got Conan?
I think 4.
Okay. That's not bad. That's very fast, right?
It's pretty fast.
Yeah. And so what's the process of Conan? Because what I hear with late night TV shows is you sort of get a call and they say, get your 5 minutes together. I'll tell you. And then you just ding the bell if I'm right. I want to know if the process has changed, because this is from someone who recently went on Conan. You get a call, get your 5 minutes ready. You send it to them. You don't hear back from them for like months. All of a sudden, hey, you want to be on next week or next month. It suddenly happens. They adjust your wording because some stuff won't be passed by lawyers. They adjust your set. And then the day of, they fly you in. And I want to know how long you get to stay in the city and what kind of fruit basket you have.
Well, when I did it, Conan was here. So there was no flying involved with the first one.
Do they still put you up? Because you kind of are like, hey, you didn't have to spring for this. Let me have like the better chocolate or something.
I would take a Greyhound bus to Nashville and ask them to fly me back home.
First class. Right.
Yeah, this is going to seem strange, but I'm in Nashville right now. I do remember they had popcorn, though, you know, like the big thing of like the multi-flavored popcorns, like kettle corn and all that.
Where it has, in one bucket, has three different pockets of popcorn.
One was cheesy, one was like caramel.
Do you know that that used to be considered fancy? I remember working, I worked in an office for like 1 year of my life, and come Christmas, I'm like, what's with these buckets of popcorn? And I shit you not, people got so excited. They're like, we're getting the popcorn. I'm like, oh my God, I got to get out of here.
Right.
What is happening? These are from super rich clients. They're like, here's some popcorn. Merry Christmas.
Right. I was talking to somebody the other day that in their office, they have Pajama Friday.
Ugh.
And she's just like, how about you just respect us? You know? They're like, oh, tomorrow's going to be exciting. We're going to bring in Shake Shack. And it's like, I'm an adult. How about you just pay me what I'm worth?
Yeah.
And don't trick me with a hot dog.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to trick me into thinking we're on a sleepover.
Right.
God. And then if you don't get dressed in your pajamas, you're a loser.
You're not a team player.
Yeah, you're not participating in office culture. Yeah.
Ooh, another cake. Yeah. But this is different because, you know, it's backstage. You're a star. You get your popcorn. You get your own room.
Your own room.
Right? Yep.
Did you have your name up there?
I did. Yep. Conan came back beforehand to kind of just say good luck. And
had you met him before?
No. No. So, yeah, it was all really pretty trippy because, yeah, only being in it, you know, about 4 years at that point. Yeah. And then just being.
That's weird. Is Conan your age?
No, Conan is, he's probably 4 or 5 years older than I am. He's probably
That's your age, I feel like. Especially, you know, years ago, right? Like 20 years ago.
Yeah, I'm 49. If I had to guess, he's probably about 55 or so.
So were you guys in the rooms together not that long before? I feel like.
Did you know of him?
Yeah.
As a comedian?
Oh, no. He never did stand up. Okay. Yeah. I mean, he was a writer for SNL, for The Simpsons. Yeah. So I, you know, until he got that show, I didn't even know of him.
Oh.
Yeah.
So who was he to judge you? Because I saw that set and he's just making smirks and notes.
Did anyone come with you to the Conan show?
My manager at the time, Jeff Sussman, came with me.
Yeah. But you didn't get to have like an entourage, like here's Hollis, you know, here's...
Whatever girl you're trying to hit on at that church. Yeah. Was there a lady in the audience?
There's a couple of nuns.
Where you're like, I do want this girl or woman to like what I'm doing.
Because I don't think I would have brought anyone because it was too much at stake. You
okay.
know, I wasn't that confident in how it was going to go.
Okay.
What did you feel walking on a stage that's more permanent because now you're on TV? This is the big break. This will actually change your career, right?
Oh, it meant everything. Yeah, it was exciting. It was terrifying. You know, this was NBC, Conan. It was my first TV credit. Like,
did you throw up?
I didn't throw up. Right. Yeah, nothing that bad. But yeah, it was very nerve-wracking to, you know, you just go over your set, every word, every...
Do you remember the first line you said on Conan?
No.
Because I remember the first line of my Haftorah because I'm like, oh my God, I got to get this right. So it's been 20, 30, I don't know how old I am anymore. It's been about 30 years. And I'm like, Vina Donani Tavala. Because I'm like, ugh.
That was my opening line. Yeah. Now that you say it.
It's also easier to remember lines when you're rocking back and forth. Did you do that?
I did. That was afterwards.
Did they change any of your set that you submitted?
I don't remember. I do remember.
You're pretty clean, right?
Yeah. But I think that sometimes there are things that if it has any kind of corporate reference, I think I had a joke about like Taco Bell or something. And I can't remember.
Ripping off their employees and not giving them minimum wage.
So he had to call it like Taco Alarm.
Right. Yes.
What did you change it to? Do you remember?
I think I probably just didn't do the joke, if I remember. Yeah.
You couldn't say like a certain taco company.
Exits the minute you enter.
Well, here's the joke. I said Taco Bell... I said, I think all the value meals at Taco Bell should be called number two.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's what you couldn't hear on Conan, ladies and gentlemen. Right. Yes.
Well, every company's owned by every company. You don't know who owns Taco Bell, right. You know? Right.
It's probably McDonald's, let's be honest.
You end up performing at Caroline's Comedy Club, big comedy club, of course, in New York, in America. And a producer or a writer for Oz, perhaps mm-hmm. the first, I think, big HBO show.
Did that come before Sopranos? Yeah. Wow.
I think right, yeah.
And Oz, which was a great show. However, I had to admit, it did get a little silly. So it begins
where, all that rape got really out of control.
Where they have, you're going to see these criminals in a jail system, but to literally see them on a TV show, you have to make the jail cells glass. And they pretend that's so that we can all be a community and it's more about rehab than punishment. Meanwhile, after the 16th rape and 20th murder, you would think the program was called a failure, right? I mean, surprised it, the whole jail ends by it being burned down. This guy, I hope he was fired, whoever was in charge of this jail, because that is a terribly, terribly run jail. Everybody's dying. And of course, everybody's dying or you wouldn't be watching, but everybody's getting raped. Everybody's dying.
Right.
We just learned a lot about Keith.
Right. Number one show. It wasn't me.
That's true.
So this person sees you at Caroline's. And do you remember what you were talking about that he said, hey, you will be a great prisoner to get raped?
I was actually talking about prison rape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
I had a bit about...
Oh, that's right.
I had a bit that if I ever was in jail and
it was the
tried
cover
to rape
of
me,
one of your albums, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, continue.
Yeah. That I would immediately try to rape him back. And mm-hmm. then it was kind of just a physical bit of like we're running in a circle.
Right.
You know, just making light of rape.
Right. As you do. And that puts you on Oz. My next stand-up, it's all going to be about detectives with superpowers. Let's see what I can get on.
Not a bad move.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So then in Oz, you're in one of those scenes where everybody's in a circle and you talk about your rape experience, which wasn't on camera.
That's right. I was in a rape therapy group.
As probably in the corner of that room, somebody's getting raped.
Yeah, right behind, right over my shoulder. I was like, can you guys hold it down? I'm trying to get over my rape.
Who was the main character that was in that scene?
Rita Moreno was Sister Pete.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a thrill because I had been watching her since I was a kid on Electric Company or whatever.
Oh, that's funny, right?
You know? So yeah, she was in West Side Story and all this. She's, right. A legend. So that was a thrill. And just the fact that, it happened, like for something that I hadn't auditioned for, like Tom Fontana just happened to be in the crowd.
That's so interesting that you can, this guy is telling a story and it's like, you know what? You tell your story, you could tell other people's story. Come on in.
Yeah.
Well, you know what was cool about Tom Fontana was that he was very kind of outside the box in his casting. He would go to shows around New York. He cast like poets, slam poets and...
Oh, right. Some of that main character in the wheelchair.
That's right.
He's an actual poet, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tom would.
So dynamic.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would just see people.
Hey,
and
guys, everyone could
them.
Be a rape victim. Look at this poet.
Right. Yeah. So
that's cool. I think he just wanted to expense a lot of comedy clubs. But hey, whatever. Right. I would do the same thing.
Yeah. You're right. Because his joke about raping back is absurd.
Yeah.
And that's like, right. You know what? You will be so great where you're not absurd. Right. You're talking about really getting raped.
Yeah.
You'll be perfect.
Luckily, he had an imagination because, the joke would not indicate it.
Yeah, I think Ken is right. He's rating off steaks.
Yeah, it's like, hey, this 2-drink minimum is adding up. Right. So.
But, I think it's, important to point out, too, that Susie Essman from Curb Your Enthusiasm had put me on her show at Caroline's, and that was... how Tom saw me, because Susie was like very good at getting industry to her shows. Now, I didn't know that Tom was there, but just to point out that the same way that you asked how I got Conan, it was because that veteran comic Jim Myers got me his manager. He's he just saw me a couple times and said I'd like to make that connection. So I got a manager and I got on Conan, and then with Susie, she got me on that show, and so like. There's a lot of things that happen over the course of a career.
But it sounds like it is who you know. Kind of.
Kind of, but it's also the generosity of fellow comics, you know?
The generosity, who you know. And everybody's wasting time with the talent and the writing, right?
Just go to your local community theater talent show and, you're off and running.
Did you hang out a lot? a lot of comics, not only do you have to be on stage, but because it is let's help our friends out, let's connect each other with other people, did you find it mandatory to hang out after shows?
You know, it's interesting because I did not do that for a long time. It took me years to even realize these people are my friends. Right? Because I was from New York.
Too.
Yeah. Was it because you're from here? Because that was why for me, I'm from here and I have my family and my friends here. So like for a lot of these people who move here, they're looking for a community. But for the first like at least 5 to 7 years, I would do my sets and go home. I wasn't even conscious that there was a scene.
Mm. Right.
Wow. And then what? And then you, why, what made you start doing that? You're like, you know what? I need new friends. These guys seem to be into me.
I think it dawned on me like, oh, you like, you know, this isn't just like a job. Like these right. are your friends who you're going through life with, you know? And then also a big part of it was when we did the Comedians Coalition, just working so closely with guys like Russ Meneve and Tom Shalhoub and everybody.
Fighting for pay.
Yeah, yeah.
For higher
yeah,
pay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, higher pay, not fair pay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was kind of an epiphany of like, I was almost ashamed of myself, but I don't know. Sometimes like when you don't, part of it was being so focused on just doing the work and going home. But yeah, I was not ashamed, but I was almost a little embarrassed that like I had let all that time go by without realizing these were my friends.
That's really nice. But that means that your friendship was developing and then you kind of woke up to it.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
I would think like, because I used to go to the Comedy Cellar as a kid a lot. So the older comics, I'm just like, are you talking to me like I'm just a person? You know, this is like Jim Norton. Like I just texted Jim Norton. I still can't relate that to a grounded level so much because I've been watching him for over 2 decades, live in person and whatever he does on TV. And it was very little at first, but
I find comedians in general flaky. When you do the Comedy Coalition, you're fighting for the comedians. Were they helping you? Or are they like, you're not boycotting the right clubs, you're taking $4 and saying it's okay? Were they almost fighting you?
There was a little bit of all of that, yeah. Like the ones who were the quote-unquote leaders, myself, Russ, Tom, Buddy Bolton, Ray Allen, these people were... We were all on the same page and we were having meetings with the club owners, having meetings with AFTRA. There was a guy, Stephen Burrow, who was he was a lawyer that worked for AFTRA.
And AFTRA is the place that collects your royalties, right?
They're the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. So it was a union of TV and radio. Yeah, but they do all that. They
make
negotiate
sure you get
contracts.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So Stephen Burrow was kind of working
like
with
Teamsters
us.
It's like Teamsters for, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So Stephen Burrow was nice enough to work with us for free to kind of serve as like a legal voice. So yeah, we were all working together. But as far as like when we got into the larger community and we would have meetings at AFTRA with, you know, there'd be as many as maybe 200 comedians there. It would get a little unwieldy and a little like people, you know, kind of going off topic or saying like, you know,
dick jokes.
Yeah. Some people were there just to kind of, you know, be the, to be almost the class clown at these meetings,
that's funny.
You know?
That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
We came to a meeting one time to just see what you guys were fighting for. And because we were podcasting and booking you guys, we wanted to understand. And I did not know how little people were paying, and I don't really know what the pushback was, because you weren't asking for that much. How that's got to be hard to look at your boss's face and say, we all want to raise.
Yeah. I mean, well, it was like you say, it was so obvious that we were being underpaid that it was kind of shameful, I think, for the clubs and also for it to start to become public. It's like, you know, like you said, most people are like, what? They make what? That's like one.
Right. We think you're superstars. We think you're getting paid hundreds for the moment that you gave us because our bill is hundreds every time.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Like one table could pretty much pay like
all
two comics, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But half off on chicken wings.
So good.
Ted, congrats on everything.
Thank you.
I mean that. Look at that. Ted Alexandro. Follow him online. If you have a chance to see him live, I'll tell you this. I've seen Ted more than a couple times live. And no matter what the venue was, He delivered 100%. You don't see that all the time. All right. Thank you guys very much for listening. Thanks for telling your friends. Thanks for subscribing. And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com.
Hello, I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. And he's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat.
Bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I help people. She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My